Kingway, Spock's beard, look, his action very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hot. Spore drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. He's a bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We talk about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It's Thursday night. We're live. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We would love to hear from you guys, and I'm so excited. That song gets me psyched. It gets me pumped. Eric did a phenomenal job on it. I love it. It puts me in the mood to Trek Talk. But beyond that, at my feet here, I have a box of Trek Talking t-shirts and Trek Talking mugs. And I'd love to get those into your hands. Keep an eye out on our Facebook page to find out how you can acquire some of this awesome merch. It'll be up there as soon as I get a chance to do it. Also, please go over and check out our new pod page at, or, I'm sorry, our new web page at podpage.com/trek-talking. And there you can find all of our previous shows, and you can find links to how to listen to all of them. And there's all kinds of great stuff there. So please go and check that out. You can follow us there, and then you'll never miss an exciting podcast. So keep that in mind. Before we get too far, though, I want to introduce my awesome Trekspurts. Let's start off with, we don't have our trifecta. We only have our dynamic duo this week. Well, let's start off with Robin. How you doing, Paul? Better known as the wine guy.
Ooh.
Jim parted from me and never parted, never and always, touching and touched. We meet at the appointed place.
And that would be here and now. And of course, if Paul is Robin of the dynamic duo, who does that make Eric? Batman. How you doing, Eric?
Woman?
Oh, man, I am doing great. I am just happy to be from the same city as Paul and to know him in person. He's a good friend and a big hoot to hang out with.
Oh, this means the check cleared. Excellent.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And, oh, man, what a great intro with the touched and untouched. Yeah, there's so much amok to talk about right now. I'm just bursting at the seams.
But lots of hijinks.
Speaking
of hijinks, let's jump to Las Vegas where Charles is hanging out tonight. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing good. Attempting to enjoy this nice invention called air conditioning as our first heat wave passes through.
Yes, I hear that.
And let you guys have a treat of enjoying it too.
Charles, to me, heat wave is like 90. What is heat wave to you?
Oh, we're getting our first heat advisory of the season. 106 today.
Not on.
Probably about 108 for the next couple days.
Oof.
It'll cool down on Sunday when the wind comes through and blows the heat up toward Portland.
No, we don't want it.
Wow, I'll tell you what. You know what
nah,
goes
dude.
For a heat wave here in Vermont? You know what a heat wave is here in Vermont? When it hits the 80s.
78?
It stops snowing.
Yeah.
Say.
Yeah, 80s. When it hits the 80s, it's you're cranking on the AC because it's too hot.
You're like, oh,
so,
I'm sweating.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
how can you live when it's...
Conversely, you're outside when it's 33 degrees in your shorts, right?
Oh, that's true. That's true. It's just a matter of where you live. It's a sliding
that's
scale,
right.
You
that's
know?
Right.
when it hits 50, we're opening up the windows because it's so hot outside.
That's right. That's right.
So anyways, guys, we have a great show planned for you tonight. Before we get started, though, we do fan shout-outs every week, and we thank you guys for listening. And we're closing in on 100,000 followers on our Facebook. I never would have thought that. Would you ever have thought that, Eric?
Wow. It's like a number that seemed insurmountable back when I joined this podcast. But I'm telling you, it's like an X. I wish I had started graphing it over the last year because I'm such a nerd. I would love to do that because I feel like it's an exponential curve right now. It just faster, which is really cool.
Well, 98,978 listeners. Wow. And speaking of that, there's a list out of the top 60 Star Trek podcasts. And of course, I'm mentioning it to you guys because, well, my favorite podcast made the list. The best podcast about Star Trek from thousands of podcasts on the web, ranked by traffic, social media followers, domain authority, and freshness. And Trek Talking comes in at number 22 out of the top 60, chosen out of thousands. And thank you so much to all of you guys for making that's incredible. Think about that for a second. Number 22.
I'm still trying to figure out what domain authority and freshness means.
Well, freshness, we got freshness in the bag because we are doing fresh stuff every single time. That's always on whatever the latest and greatest is. Domain authority, I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah, that sounds very subjective. I don't know, man. I'm just excited to be at 22. That's great.
I don't know what that means either, but I'm glad. I mean, I was looking through the list, and I'm like, oh, yeah, let's check this out. And I wasn't even going to bother. And I'm scrolling through, and I'm seeing all the big guns. And as I get further down the list, I'm like, whoa, what was that? And I had to go back. I was like, that's us. We made it. So thank you so much to each and every one of you guys for making that possible. I can't stress to you how important it is and how much it means to me that you guys are actually listening to us talk about Star Trek. That's just incredible. So thank you so much.
To all of us, I have a feeling that like we all might sit around a fire together and talk about Star Trek, but isn't it fun to do it on the internet with millions of other people? I love it.
It is. I think it's great. And that's, we have listeners all over the place, Ray's down in Brooklyn and Anna's out in Portland where you guys are. We got that guy down in Australia whose name I don't remember. But,
we got Malaysia, we got like China, we got South Africa. I mean, we got like every continent. The only continent we haven't hit yet is the one way, way down under. We haven't gotten anybody from Antarctica, but I'm hopeful.
You never know. You never know. So thank you so much, guys, for doing that. I from the bottom of my heart, kapla, I really, really appreciate it. So speaking of thanking the fans, you can head over to our Facebook page at Trek Talking and Beyond. You'll see the Live Long and Prosper at the top of the page. Just drop us a little line in there and say, hey, Uncle Jim, I'm listening to you in Malaysia or wherever. And every week, yours truly will pick 15 lucky, well, no, actually, it's up to 20 now, 20 lucky listeners. And if you see a heart next to your name from me, you want to tune in because your name is going to be immortalized across the internet as an official Trek Talking supporter and listener. So, Eric, why don't you get us started?
Well, Jim, I feel like maybe there's a very small chance that the dude might have been Will Wright from Canberra, Australia. Will Wright, if you are the dude, please give us a call. And even if you're not the dude, you should still call us because we love all of our supporters from down under. So thank you, Will Wright, for listening to us. We're also saying hello this week to top fan Mildred Collar from New Orleans, Louisiana. Gives us a little Live Long and Prosper. I have been to your fair city a couple of times, and I find it intoxicating in more ways than one. Thank you, Mildred, for supporting our podcast. Hello to Jimmy Callen from Brookings, Oregon. Brookings, I have not been through your town. I know where it is. But Jimmy, thank you for being from my home state and Paul's home state. And thank you for supporting our podcast. We love you, man. We're also saying hello this week to Nick Pace from Eltham, in the UK, who also sends us a live long and prosper. We always appreciate our listeners across the pond, so thanks, Nick, for listening to us. And hello as well this week to Gabriel K. Grimm. Ooh, that's a great name. I love that. With two M's. Ooh, spooky. From Saskatoon all the way up in Canada. Thank you, Gabriel K. Grimm, for listening to us all the way from Saskatoon. Oh, that's so cool. Charles, who would you like to say hello to this week?
Let's start off with Christopher Cobb in Carnes, Queensland, Australia. Brenty Bean from Oklahoma. I hope Brent is okay. Elaine Algava. I'm from New York, New Jersey, transplanted living in Georgia. Ah, had to get away from Jim's weather, I bet. Mandy Finley from Fresno, California. And Tina Sabino Torres, originally from California, but I've been in Utah for 23 years. Oh, which part of Utah? Paul, what about you?
All right, friends, we have all kinds of folks. I'm going to spin the globe and take us down to the southern hemisphere of our planet. And a fantastic hello to Stuart Mitchell in Martin Rangitaki in New Zealand, pronounced the Maori way, if I'm saying it the correct way. It should be Aotearoa is New Zealand. And absolutely great to hear that our words are making it to you all the way on the other side of the planet, my friend. Thank you for listening. Spinning things around a little bit more in Mansfield, England. Hello to Paul Howard. Thank you so much for listening. And this is a Globetrotter. Are you ready for this? Say hello to Sarah Vossler, a listener who's from New Jersey, but now lives in Malaysia. That's going to give you whiplash and jet lag combined, Sarah. But it sounds like despite those hemispheric jauntings, Sarah is continuing to listen to us on a regular basis. So we say thank you so much. And in the fabulous country of Poland, a big Trek Talk and hello to Monika Hetera Misejuk. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It almost sounded Klingon, Monika, the way I said that. So I hope that was okay, but thank you so much for tolerating our pronunciations, and thank you even more for listening. And yes, right around over the next horizon from Monika, we move over to the Netherlands, and a big Trek Talk and kapla to John Barendek. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for keeping fandom alive amidst all the tulips, canals, and windmills, my friend. It is great to hear from all of you. Spinning the old compass needle over back to Jim. Jim, who you got there?
Well, we want to say thank you to Emma Chapa, who's listening in Corpus Christi, Texas. Kapla. We want to say thank you to Ken Malamy, who's listening in Brooklyn, New York. Represent, brother. Represent. I love me some Brooklyn pizza. Wow, I got to tell you. We also want to say thank you to Joe King Richie Duffy from Darlington County, Durham, UK, and Michael Hodder from Arizona right here in the US of A. And last but definitely not least, we want to say thank you to Sherry McNew Julian from Maryland, but currently living in Florida. That wraps up our fan shout-outs for this week, guys. If you'd like to be on a fan shout-out, just head over to our Facebook page, and we'd love to give you a fan shout out as well. And now that brings us up to a part of the show that I really enjoy, our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
No, Grumpy Worf says that every week, and we don't care. We like it anyways. And we always start off our Star Trek birthdays by remembering those who, sadly enough, are no longer amongst us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Yeah, Jim, this week we are going to be remembering seven members of our Star Trek community who have gone before us. The first is actor John Abbott, who in the Star Trek world was best known as Aelborn in TOS's episode Errand of Mercy, one of those most quintessential episodes of TOS, I think, and him being a quintessential character, of course, of that episode. Interestingly enough, only 9 months after filming the episode Errand of Mercy, Abbott coincidentally uttered that episode's name to Vince Howard in the Bewitched episode, Samantha's Da Vinci Dilemma. And I am also a big fan of Bewitched, which was also in syndication when I was a kid in the 70s. So I probably saw John Abbott on that as well. So happy birthday to John Abbott, known as Aelborn from Errand of Mercy. We're also saying happy birthday this week to actor Robert Lansing, an actor who we've talked about quite a bit recently on the podcast for various reasons, playing the very well-known role of Gary Seven in TOS's episode Assignment Earth. We have talked in the past about how we got to see a little bit more about his character using his visage in some of the most recent Star Trek comics. So nice to see him coming around. And of course, Robert Lansing has one of those classic faces from the 60s. You know, he was all over the place on television, a lot of cop shows, a lot of mystery type shows. So very famous actor, Robert Lansing, known as Gary Seven, would have had a birthday this week. We're also saying happy birthday to George Wallace, who played Vice Admiral Simons in TNG's episode Man of the People. And I have a theory. He's not so bad because he's a vice admiral, not a real admiral, I guess. I don't know. What's the difference with a vice admiral? Charles, you must know this. What's a vice admiral? I don't even know.
I think it's an in-between step. I'd have to look
okay.
it up. I think it's an in-between
like between captain
step.
And admiral or something. Yeah, well, interestingly, he's not so bad in this episode. George D. Wallace was also on a great episode of Forbidden Planet back in the 50s. So happy birthday to George D. Wallace. We're also saying happy birthday.
I think it's like a Padawan. They're an evil admiral in training, but they haven't attained the full evilness.
They've worked their way up through the system, but they haven't had enough time there to realize that they exploit it.
Exactly. Yep.
George Wallace, thanks for being one of the good ones. All right. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Jesse Lawrence Ferguson, who played Lutan in TNG's episode Code of Honor. Great actor, an episode I don't like to talk about too much, but he also had a couple of really cool other acting roles. He actually played in 1990, he had a role as Eddie Black in the opening scenes of Darkman, which is a movie that I have a special affinity for. I don't know why I love that movie so much, but I really do. But he's probably most well known for his role in Boys in the Hood. He played a dirty cop in that movie. So happy birthday to Jesse Lawrence Ferguson. Saying happy birthday this week to Herta Ware, the original Picard's mom, Yvette Picard from TNG's episode Where No One Has Gone Before. Not necessarily a real version, sort of a vision, I guess, of his mother, Picard's mother. Maybe what could have been, definitely seen in a different light after Picard season two. So happy birthday to Herta Ware, who was also very well known, of course, as Rosie in Cocoon from 1985. We're also saying happy birthday this week to Joan Marshall, who played Lieutenant Ariel Shaw in TOS's episode Court Martial, another one of the episodes that I consider in my top lexicon of episodes. I love that episode so much. She was also in The Twilight Zone. She was on a couple of other television shows from the 60s. So great actress. Joan Marshall played Lieutenant Ariel Shaw. Happy birthday. And our final remembrance this week goes out to actor Alan Marcus, who played the character of Samno in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. He got a speaking part in a major or, you know, more major role in this movie. But Alan Marcus is really mostly known for his stunt work over the years. Various television series throughout the 80s and 90s, stunt coordinator, stunt performer, all sorts of great, he probably knows Leslie or knows of Leslie if they have never met. So happy birthday, or would have known Leslie, I should say. So happy birthday and remembrances going out to Alan Marcus. And that wraps up our remembrance birthdays for this week, you guys. Charles, why don't you kick us into celebrations of those who are still with us?
Okay. Well, I just looked up, even though I just lost my internet for a bit. We get into Admiral. We start with a Rear Admiral, Vice Admiral, then Admiral.
Aha.
So it is basically an Admiral in training.
Wow. So it's three steps from Captain to Admiral. I didn't know that. Interesting.
I thought Vice Admiral was in charge of contraband. No?
It's
contraband? depends on what ship they're assigned to.
Yeah.
Or which fleet they're assigned to.
Which part of the world they're in.
Well, let's start off with Michael Phillips.
Dramatic pause.
Got to get me that
Michelle Phillips, who played Janice Mannheim in TNG's, will always have Paris. Michael Greyeyes played Felix in Discovery's The Example. Mark Herlick played Kishak from Void Counterpoint.
Yeah, to me, that is pronounced exactly like the planet that Chewbacca is from, Kashyyyk.
I don't think that's a mistake either. I think they did that intentionally.
I think so. Yep. One less Y, but yeah.
We got Duncan Frazier, who played Ensign Walsh in Enterprise's Bound. Bernie Casey. Played Calvin Hudson, DS9, the Maquis, Arch.
Can
I just mention, like, Bernie Case, first of all, great character, great episode. Secondly, one of the absolute useful characters in all of Star Trek Attack Wing. If you were to pull Star Trek Attack Wing players and ask them what their favorite card was, I would bet you that a solid like 25 to 30% would say Calvin Hudson. Calvin, and because we geek out on this every once in a while, Calvin Hudson, add one tech, weapon, or crew upgrade to your upgrade bar. If this card is assigned to an independent ship, all of your upgrades cost -1 SP. He's a 5-skill captain for only 3 SP. So not only is he 3 SP for 5-skill, but he discounts every single thing on your ship by 1. And let me tell you, friends, if you're a Star Trek Attack Wing aficionado, that is some heavy, heavy value right there. So thank you, Calvin Hudson, for being an awesome character and for having an awesome Star Trek Attack Wing card.
And he was in Revenge of the Nerds, too.
He was? Was he really?
Wow.
Yo.
Cool.
Now, I actually dug this birthday up myself on one of my Facebook groups. A very happy birthday to one of our favorite authors, especially a couple of guys on the other line. As we talk about the Star Trek Discovery's Drastic Measures, as somebody calls it, the Lorca book, and many other Star Trek novels. A very happy birthday to Dayton Ward, one of our top authors.
If you guys are looking for a really good Discovery book to read, you got to read Drastic Measures. I'm telling you, it's really, actually, we haven't read a Discovery book yet that wasn't good. Maybe one, but I won't mention it. They are really good books.
I believe we had both Dayton Ward and David Mack on the show, and they were both absolutely delightful. It was great to just be able to enjoy their company and like talk about Star Trek literature with them and what it was like to just produce Star Trek books. And you know, if you haven't read a Star Trek book in a long time, it's not like the old pocketbook days. All of these Discovery books are very well connected to canon. They have, you know, technical advisors. we consider them extremely canon adjacent. So it wouldn't, and in fact, a couple of things here and there that like tie in pretty closely. So yeah, happy birthday, Dayton Ward.
And don't forget Una, she's been on too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's the best. I mean, she's my favorite. That Tilly book was unbelievable. Still one of my favorite interviews we've ever done.
Yeah, that was a fun one. All right, sorry to interrupt you, Charles.
All right. I was going to jump in. I can't remember the title of the episode that book actually ties into. They keep wanting to call it Conquest of the King.
Oh, the Conscience of the King.
Conscience of the King.
Yeah, the TOS episode.
That book actually backstories that episode.
Yep.
Very well done, because you learn a lot about why Kirk and such were so upset at that person.
Well, yeah, you learn a lot about the bad guy, too. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. And my last one of my big birthdays that I get to have is a very happy birthday to Dr. McCoy. Oh, from the other universe. Happy birthday to Carl Urban, our other Dr. McCoy.
Judge Dredd.
Judge Dredd.
And I have to tell you, Carl Urban, I hate to say it, guys, but man, he is my absolute favorite character from the Kelvin movies. I just, his bones just resonates for me. I love him so much.
Totally.
In fact,
he's awesome.
And Lord of the Rings. He was in Lord of the Rings.
He's everywhere, man. He's so
on the Boys. He's on the Boys.
I just watched him on the Boys just before the podcast.
Yeah.
Where he's totally different than he is as McCoy in the Boys, though. if you want to tune into the Boys expecting to see Dr. McCoy, hold on to your hats, people, because it ain't not, it's totally different. Mike, so I met
Carl Urban
at a Star Trek convention up here at Trek Conroga, and he was up there, and I went over to meet him, and I shook his hand and talked to him, and I had him sign a picture of Dr. McCoy from Star Trek Beyond. And he looked at me and he says, well, what would you like me to sign? And my name is Jim, right? So I said, my name is Jim. So instead of signing it to Jim, could you just sign he's dead, Jim? And then right? So
perfect.
He signs it. He signs it. He's dead, Jim. And then underneath it, he put dot, dot, dot and wrote not with a big explanation point. Because
in fact, I was going to say,
he's funny.
Star Trek Las Vegas. I didn't really get to see a whole lot of people in the last show, but the previous 2 years, the only person from the Kelvin universe that I have seen on a panel is Carl Urban. He's the only one of that crew that I've actually seen at Star Trek Las Vegas.
You know, you're right, Charles. It's odd because you don't see any of the other Kel. You would think that that you might see Scotty around because of all the stuff that he does, Simon Pegg. But Carl is the only one you see on the convention circuit. The other ones, I don't know why. That's odd. But you're right. Carl's around from time to time. And if you get a chance to meet Carl, please do, because he's a riot. Yep. And that brings us up to Paul. Yep.
All right, friends. Well, we got to all kinds of interesting folks here. First of all, a joyous happy birthday to Bonnie Turpin, who portrayed Ensign Swin on the Voyager episodes Tuvix and Resolution. So a couple of great episode appearances there. Next up, a mischievous, foreboding, and entirely morally ambiguous happy birthday to James Callis. Okay, who is James Callis, you say? Well, most recently, Picard fans have seen him play none other than family patriarch Maurice Picard on at least 3 episodes, Stargazer, Monsters, and Hide and Seek. So brought a whole new dimension to the Picard family tree there, kind of a dark and brooding one, I would say. But sci-fi fans are going to know Mr. Callis indelibly for his portrayal of that mischievous prankster, that Cylon lover, Gaius Baltar on Battlestar Galactica, the reboot. So I think that's it's never going to outlive that one, James. That's going to be on your resume for the rest of your life. What a great character. So always
so
a terrific presence, right? He's
so
such
good.
A great actor. Really, really awesome. Happy birthday as well to Amrit Kaur, played Cadet Thera Sidhu on the Short Treks episode Ask Not.
Do you guys think that she's going to show up on Strange New Worlds at some point? I mean, she's on the ship.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it would be surprising to me, actually, if they didn't bring her back, given that that was such a fun, like, Short Trek, and I would love to see her character, honestly. Like, that would be fun.
You know, I can answer that question for you very easily on behalf of Amrit, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
It all depends on who Amrit's agent is and what they're willing to do.
Yeah.
How many phone calls and how pesky they want to be, right? You got to be tenacious. And hopefully that's the kind of agent that Amrit Kaur has. Happy birthday as well to Alex Datcher, Ensign Tite. I believe it's Tate. You got to really be careful with pronunciation of this one here. It's T-A-I-T-T.
I think it is Tate.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Tate, okay? And then we'll play it safe on the Next Gen episode, Descent Part 2. Not Descent Part 1, but Descent Part 2. So a little Borg proximity there, Alex. Also, Feliz Cumpleaños to Seamus Patterson, played Cadet Harrell on Discovery episodes All Is Possible and Coming Home. And I love saying happy birthday to this next cat who's had an incredible career. All right. I mean, you look at the credits for James Darren. Oh, my God. Well, Star Trek fans are going to think of James Darren. They're going to think of, let's just say, Lounge Lizard. Is that appropriate from Deep Space Nine?
Yeah, he's
Vic
absolutely
Fontaine?
A Lounge Lizard. Yeah,
I would say
sure.
he's totally a Lounge Lizard, but he's perhaps the kind of guy I would expect that Charles would see walking up and down the strip in Vegas, right? Because that's who Vic Fontaine is all about. But you check out James Darren's career, man. I mean, one of the first things he really, you know, he'd been in all of, like, early Elvis movies, Gidget movies back in the late 50s. He really started to hit the list when he got in The Guns of Navarone with Gregory Peck.
Mm-hmm.
That was like 1961. Mm-hmm. And then growing up, I was a big fan of this guy. Seen him on all of the great Irwin Allen era TV shows. He was like a lead player on Time Tunnel. I don't know if a lot of people watch Time Tunnel, but it's great. Really influential show for its era. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, just City Beneath the Sea TV movie, you name it, man. This guy was on everything. He was on SWAT, Policewoman, Charlie's Angels. He worked a ton. Hawaii 5-0. He's still out there working. Fantasy Island, you name it. I mean, in the 80s, this guy just never stopped. I mean, ever. And that brought him to Deep Space Nine. So really, really great to be able to acknowledge him. And a heck of a legacy, Mr. Darren. So holding up that martini glass in your direction, Vic Fontaine. Thanks for the memories. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm going to throw in a little, I'm going to throw in a little bite on his because I believe he is part of the Rat Pack. And I don't know about this year, but if you ever get a chance to stick around and attend Star Trek Las Vegas, stick around after Sunday night, after the convention closes, and go catch the Rat Pack on stage for free.
Cool.
You'll see.
That sounds like fun.
Oh, man. I gotta tell you.
I've seen Nana, I can't think of her first last name, Nana.
Visitor. Yeah.
Visitor on stage. I've seen the Grand Magus on stage. Oh, I forgot who all's part of that. But if you want to see a classic version of the Rat Pack in Star Trek form, stick around and see the Rat Pack
I will indeed, my friend. I will indeed. I'm a big fan of many of the Rat Packers, Sammy Davis Jr., and, of course, Francis Albert, you know, let's be honest. Come
imagine a concert of Rat Pack style of Star Trek actors.
That sounds awesome.
I'm imagining it really clearly. I'm imagining William Shatner being part of that same
Shatner's not in there, but the Grand Negus is there. We got a Taylor on stage.
I'm imagining sitting at a table together enjoying this, both with Sazeracs in our hands.
Yeah, exactly. I'm imagining that we'd be like one Sazerac away from getting up on stage and joining them. Say, you know, Grand Negus, sit this one out, Grand Negus. Let Eric and I show you how it's done. Okay? And then we'll bust into a Star Trek song. So I'll talk to you about a little writing idea that we might have to come up with. We need some new music, Eric, so I might have a thought that we'll have to do. I've been inspired by all this Vic Fontaine talk, so we'll have to meet offline and discuss. But happy birthday, whether or not you're a lounge lizard or a consumer of jewels on Quark's Promenade, wherever you may be, happy birthday, especially if your birthday lies in the days and weeks ahead. But coming up next, we've got a birthday, an honorary celebration that is four decades in the making, peeps. And no one is better suited to wish that birthday out there than Big Uncle Jim. Take it away, Jim.
Well, we want to say happy birthday, Pally, in the words of Vic Fontaine, to, I think, one of the most influential movies of Star Trek at the time. I got to add that, at the time. And before, you know what, we play this clip. I'm going to play this clip. Before every podcast, these guys can attest, there's a clip that we always play. We play this clip to get us in the mood for the podcast. It's just something that we've been doing for years, and we keep on doing it. And in honor of this next birthday, I'm going to play that clip and share it with all of you guys. And yeah, here it is.
I shall leave you as you left. Maroned for all eternity in the center of a dead planet. Buried alive.
John! John!
That's right, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, was released on June 4th, 1982. Can you believe it? Did you guys go and see it on opening night? I did. I was there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I did not. I was a little young for that.
Opening night.
It was a matinee for me, man. It was a matinee viewing. We were out there in a, 11:30 show, something like that. As soon as we could get in, we were out there.
I'm telling you, another starship, the USS Reliant, the Enterprise getting shot up, Spock dying. This movie had it all, and just wow. I think it's still considered one of the Star Trek movies of all time, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. In fact, the director's cut, I believe, is going to be playing at movie theaters. Or did I miss
in
it? Was it last week?
No,
yeah,
no, it's,
yeah, it's coming
September.
Up. Yeah, it's coming
the
up.
Fall,
you guys
right?
get a chance. Yep. You can go and see The Wrath of Khan, director's cut.
It'll always be, I think, people's number one. I mean, I really, really think it will be. As far as, like, just huge mass appeal, crowd pleaser, it's like you don't have to be a Star Trek fan to get off on Wrath of Khan. It is just, it's a hugely entertaining opus. People just love it. It's a great time at the movies, period.
Well, it's a popcorn movie all the way.
I think, Paul, it's mostly because you are completely riveted right from the first scene of this movie. Like, they pull you in and then they just kind of keep it rolling. And I find Ricardo Montalban absolutely intoxicating. Like, I cannot stop looking at the guy. I've seen this movie probably at least a dozen times in my life. And he's just, the performance that he gives is so powerful. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. You all.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, just really, really something. So every time one of these like movies comes up on the big screen, I try to check it out, and I'm super excited about this one in September.
And don't forget the incredible soundtrack that goes along with it either. Mm-hmm. Great soundtrack. All right, guys. So happy birthday. Happy 40th birthday to Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. So now getting on to our Star Trek birthdays, we want to say happy birthday to Chad Allen, who played Juno in TNG's Suddenly Human. We also want to say happy birthday to Kim Rhodes, who played Lindsay Ballard in Voyager's episode Ashes to Ashes. And a big one here, Jason Isaacs, who played Captain Gabriel Lorca, Mirror Universe version, from Discovery on season one. And, you know, I went to meet him at a convention. Me and my daughter were standing in line. I'm dressed up as a Klingon. She's got on her Starfleet uniform. And a whole bunch of kids are standing around us wearing these brown robes and waving wands around. I'm like, wait, this dude's on Star. And they're all there to see Malfoy from that other movie, Harry Potter.
From Harry Potter. Harry Potter.
From Harry Potter. And everyone's going up there waving their wands at him. And there I am dressed up as a Klingon. Go figure. Great guy. He was funny as hell. I really enjoyed talking to him. Great guy. Happy birthday to Jason Isaacs. And he pulled off, guys, that was one of the best twists I've ever seen on Star Trek. And how long did we talk about it on this podcast? There's something not right about Lorca.
That's right. I mean, I would absolutely say from the very first episode, I'm pretty sure if you go back and listen to our podcast from that very first episode where we see Jason Isaacs as Lorca, I say something like, that's no Federation captain. And I was pretty upset about it. I was like, where's this show going? How can this guy be from the Federation? He's not exhibiting Federation ideals. Why do I not like this guy at my core? And it was just like he just hit me right from the beginning as a little bit off, which to me was perfect because as they developed his character, they kept throwing you little bones to kind of bring you in. You're like, okay, I don't trust him, but oh, no, maybe he's legit. Oh, no, maybe it's cool. Oh shit, he's got a really nasty menagerie going on. What's going on there?
it was great. The way they led us on, and then at the end, you're like, what a dink, and you hate him. And then in season two, the crew is really disheveled, and they bring in Pike to uplift everybody. And the first thing Pike says is, I'm not Lorca. And he gives the Pike speech where that was it for me. I was a Pike man forever. That whole thing was just done so well. And I think Jason Isaacs was the perfect person to pull that off. So happy birthday to Jason Isaacs. The next birthday, we want to say happy birthday to Gary Graham, who played the Ocampa Tanis in Voyager's episode Coldfire. But the rest of us might know him as Vulcan Ambassador Soval from Enterprise. Great character. But if you're long in the tooth like me, and you grew up watching 90s TV, for me, though, I remember him as Matthew Sykes from Alienation.
Yeah.
And which is just a great show. And it had five spinoff movies after they canceled it. Great show, Alienation. So happy birthday to Gary Graham. And I always finish off with our Klingons. And boy, have I got some good ones here. The first one I want to say is kapla to Mark Warden, who played Alexander Rozhenko grown up in the DS9 episodes, You Are Cordially Invited and Sons and Daughters. Two great episodes, and he plays an awesome, awesome Alexander. They keep him around as a good luck charm because he's not really Klingon-y enough, but he's great. It'd be great to see him show up again. Don't you think?
I'm kind of thinking, Jim, well, you know, it's funny because as you were mentioning that, I kind of feel like that would be a good Monday episode is let's do an Alexander episode where we talk about Alexander versus the young Alexander and we like headcanon some stuff related to that. Sounds like fun.
He's a great character. So happy birthday to Mark Warden. And last but not least, I saved the best for last. I don't know where to start with her, but we want to say happy birthday. We got to say happy birthday.
Well, I know
to
where
Susie
I know where you want to end.
And we're going to start off with she played the Vulcan Dr. Salar in TNG's episode The Schizoid Man. That was cool. All right, that was cool. She played a great Vulcan. Wonderful. Awesome. And not a bad episode either. She also played the female Q in Voy's episode, The Q and the Gray, another great character where she found out that she had to do the nasty with Q in order to propagate the Q species. And it was just utterly inconceivable that they would have to do something, something like that.
It's such a great, like, yeah. Janeway laying down the law episode. I love that episode.
So that's two great characters that she played so far. But wait, we are not done with Susie's Star Trek career. Oh, no, no, no. Because on Star Trek Enterprise, she played Tara in the episode Cease Fire. If you guys don't remember, she's the Andorian that was betrothed. I don't know if she was betrothed, but she was somehow entangled with Shran. It was his girlfriend, his wife, his first officer. There was something there. I don't remember exactly what.
Well, she's in the military with him first and foremost. Like, that's what I loved about her, was she was she's like the strong female military character of Enterprise.
And she gets killed by a Tellarite. And then Shran challenges the Tellarite to a duel to the death. And Archer steps in and says, no, I'll fight him. And he chops off his antenna. Great episode. And it really builds on their relationship. And that was Susie Plaxton. But I saved the best for last because she actually played one of my favorite Klingon character, female characters, other than Laurel on Discovery. And she first appeared as Kalar in an episode entitled, she first appeared on an episode of TNG called The Emissary, where she meets Worf, and we found out they had this secret affair years and years ago, and just great counterbalance for Worf, because she's half human, and she's like, the hell with all that Klingon crap, and Worf's like, Klingon crap? How dare you? I mean, it's great balance, and they made a great couple, and speaking of couples, they coupled, they pon-farred on the holodeck, and she leaves, and she's gone. And then I think it was 2 years later, she comes back in an episode called Reunion. And who's with her? But her son, Alexander. Funny, we just talked about Alexander. And Duras kills her. And I went crazy. I went crazy. Oh, my God, they killed my favorite character. Why?
I know.
I would put it out there that I think that's one of the absolute – well, first of all, one of the greatest characters on Next Gen ever, thanks to her. I mean, that was, if there was, you know, it took me a couple seasons when it was initially airing to actually get on board with Next Gen, because those early seasons were rough sledding for a while, right? Being an OG guy. It didn't,
yeah,
let's
not mention that one.
It just didn't. But man, that was one of the episodes where I was like, now they got it, right? Because it's like you got a real actor making a real character, and she was amazing. And when what happened in Reunion happened, I was just, it was devastating, man. It was just it was great. But that was just like, here we are. We're in the thick of this multi-episode, long-term Worf character arc, and he's never going to recover from this. It was just so great.
Nope.
So great, man. Susie Plaxton is phenomenal.
And she had to die because it sets up Worf's entire story arc leading all the way into Deep Space Nine when he finally kills Gowron. And so it all ties together, and it starts with Kalar. I loved her. Great Klingon, great character. Happy birthday to Susie. Kapla! May the walls of Stovacor welcome her. All right, guys, so that finishes up our birthdays. We have quite a few, but we're not done yet. We have to do our convention. Calendar.
Thank you.
All right, Eric, get us started with our convention calendar.
You got so many good ones. We're tracking this week Eternal Con, July 2nd through the 3rd at the David S. Mack Sports and Exhibition Complex in Hempstead, New York. Sounds like fun. Eternal Con. We're also going to be checking out Dice Tower East, July 6th through the 10th at the Caribe Royale Orlando in Florida. So go check out Dice Tower East. And my final convention this week is BlurredCon. It almost sounds like something from Futurama, but just a little bit outside. July through the 10th at the Hyatt Regency Crystal City at Reagan National Airport in beautiful Arlington, Virginia. Paul, what are you watching for us?
Well, you know, coming up after the July 4th weekend there, July 9th through 10th, I think we should all head over to the Men in Sports Arena in Morristown, New Jersey for the Garden State Comic Book Fest 2022 in beautiful Morristown. Who doesn't want to go there? I know I'm ready to drive 7 hours to get there, but absolutely. And if you just don't find yourself in the Tri-County area for that particular week of July, then you can go stay in Ohio, in Youngstown, Ohio, where things are crisp and clean and conservative and, you know, in some corners of the neighborhood. And you can go to the Holiday Inn Youngstown South there, Boardman location, for the Mahoning Valley Comic Con, again, July 9th through 10th. And if you feel like heading south, like way south, then you're going to go to Texas, to Cedar Park, Texas, just down the street from Austin, to the Greater Austin Comic Con, July 9th through 10th. Now, I know you don't think you can go to all three of these, even though they're the same two dates July weekend, but you might be able to. But if you're at the Greater Austin Comic Con, you're going to be at the HEB Center at Cedar Park. I am so not going to touch with the 10-foot pole ideas about what HEB might stand for, because they take things so seriously in parts of Texas. But have a great con wherever you may be in that lovely second week of July. Jim, over to you.
Well, actually, this is for the first time ever. I have three conventions that I could go to all three of them because they're all within driving distance of me. This has never happened. I should buy a lottery ticket. First and foremost, you can go to Vermont Pop Culture Con, July 9th and 10th at the DoubleTree Hilton Burlington in Vermont, South Burlington, Vermont, to be exact. Or you could go to Games for Change Festival, July 13th through the 16th at Times Center in New York, New York. And last but not least, you could go to Empire Comic Fest, July 16th at the Louis S. Wolk JCC of Greater Rochester, located in Rochester, New York. And Charles, wrapping up our convention calendar, what have you got for us?
Let's start off with Comic-Palooza, July 15th through 17th, the George R. Brown Convention Center, Houston, Texas. Frankfurt Con, July 16th, the Capitol Plaza Hotel, Frankfort, Kentucky. And this one, I'm not so sure. I'm crazy about the name change. They'll say Comic-Con International. I prefer the classic name of San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
July 21st to 24th in the San Diego Convention Center, San Diego, California. Right near the ocean.
Yep, and that
again,
wraps up.
I guess we got some news.
Yeah, actually we do. It's been a while since we've had some news, but we had some news that was newsworthy. So it's time for Star Trek news.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
All right, Eric, you get to start us off, and it's been a while since we've heard from this guy in a bit.
It has been a little while. One of our very favorite segments that we are digging back up for you guys is entitled Shatner Says, What? That's right. He's back in the news. William Shatner has a message for toxic Star Wars fans. The legendary Star Trek actor William Shatner, best known for his role, of course, as Captain James T. Kirk, takes a stand against toxic Star Wars fans. He took to Twitter to repost Obi-Wan Kenobi star Ewan McGregor's video where he defended his co-star Moses Ingram from racist attacks on social media. Shatner replied with one single message for the toxic fans. Toxicity in fandoms needs to go now. Thank you, Shatner. Since Obi-Wan Kenobi began, Ingram, who plays Reva Sendivar, the third sister, of course, in the Disney Plus series, has been the target of racist harassment. Some of those messages were posted by Ingram on her Instagram stories. Quote, there's nothing anybody can do about this, Ingram said. Quote, there's nothing anybody can do to stop this hate. I question my purpose. And even being here in an interview saying that this is happening, I don't really know. Shatner is not the only Star Trek star coming to Ingram's defense against the toxic fans. Anson Mount, who of course plays Captain Christopher Pike on Star Trek: Strange New Worlds, took to his Instagram page to offer his support. This is Moses Ingram, says Mount. She is a singular talent and a recent addition to the Star Wars universe. She has also been targeted by racists pretending to be fans because her mere existence threatens a skewed dystopian fantasy that selectively omits the likes of D. Williams and others. We have her back.
I
will tell you that I just don't get any of this stuff. She's a pretty darn fun character so far in Kenobi. She's personally, whatever you think about the series, she's one of my personal favorite characters in the series right now, because at least she's got a motivation and she's got some stuff inside of her that needs to come out. And I don't know where these fans are coming from, honestly. So good for Anson Mount. Good for Ewan McGregor. I mean, good for William Shatner. I mean, William Shatner is not the guy who's always known for going to bat for people. And I feel like in this case, he's on point. Toxicity and fandoms needs to go. And I will tell you that from our standpoint as a podcast, we sort of have to deal with this sometimes, right? We love you guys and we love our fans and we interact quite a bit with you. And sometimes when we post things that we consider to be normal or, based on basic kind of human rights principles and the principles of secular humanism, of which Gene Roddenberry was a disciple. And sometimes things blow up a little bit and we have to airlock some people as a result, which is too bad. But I will say that overall, we are so happy that our Trek Talking fans are supporters of this kind of way of thinking and are on board with things like what Anson Mount is saying here, like what William Shatner is saying here. This character is not a bad character, and she certainly does not deserve to be chastised for the color of her skin. Come on, people. We're so far past that.
Well said. Well said.
Yes.
And Charles, you got our next story for us.
Okay. Well, thank you, Eric, for doing that last story. I still don't understand the negativity towards that character. I have other issues, but not against her. But, we got some problems. Deep Space Nine's leaving Netflix USA. Star Trek now streaming exclusively on Paramount Plus. Netflix has revealed that 7 seasons of Star Trek Deep Space Nine will be leaving the streaming service on July 1st. It was the last Star Trek series available on streaming after TOS, Voyager, and Enterprise left last September and TNG left in December. Last year's Viacom CBS also ended its co-production agreement with the original series Star Trek Discovery, buying back the international distribution rights. However, as of now, the legacy Star Trek still shows up available internationally on Netflix. In January of this year, all Star Trek exited Hulu and Prime Video as well. So as of July 1st, Paramount Plus will be exclusive U.S. subscription streaming home for all of Star Trek television shows, both legacy shows and new shows. There's also a Star Trek channel on Pluto TV, the ad-supported live stream service owned by Paramount. So in the U.S., The Last of Star Trek is making its march over to Paramount Plus. So if you're not supporting Paramount Plus, it's a good time to be over there joining it so you can get all your Star Trek fix of all the current shows and legacy shows.
Yep, that's right. Paramount Plus, Star Trek 24/7, new episodes every Thursday. Paul, what do you got for us, speaking of Paramount Plus?
Oh, a segue, because you set me up beautifully, my friend, because we got lots of good Paramount Plus news for our extremely patient, long-suffering friends in the UK. Now, I have a special relationship with the UK. Fun fact about Paul, I am 50% British myself. My mother was born in England, so I feel a special kinship with my friends in England, okay? And you are about to finally have your wish come true, friends, Star Trek fans in the UK, because Paramount Plus is getting ready to launch the first three episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds any day now. Paramount Plus UK has announced highlights for their launch in June, this very month in which we find ourselves, which includes Strange New Worlds. Now, when the service arrives on Wednesday, June 22nd, that's just a few short days from now, it's going to include the first three episodes of Strange New Worlds. New episodes will be available weekly on Wednesdays for the 10-episode first season. That's the same drop date that we get here in the States. So you're going to be caught up before you know it. This does not mean that the UK and Ireland fans will be running around 5 weeks behind Paramount Plus in other regions. The UK service will include all four seasons of Star Trek Discovery, woohoo, and all 10 episodes of the first season of Star Trek Prodigy, which you have not watched, watch it. It's way, way good. There's no word yet on how new episodes from these three original Star Trek series will arrive in the future in the UK. However, recently, global Paramount Plus releases have been in the same week as the USA. So that bodes well. Star Trek Lower Decks and Star Trek Picard continue to be exclusive to Amazon Prime Video in the UK. Some Bezos clause, I don't know what that's all about. In the UK and Ireland, Paramount Plus will be available online at ParamountPlus.com and via the Paramount Plus app. Pricing is £6.99 per month, £69.90 per annum in the UK, with Republic of Ireland pricing to be confirmed in the coming weeks. It will also launch on Sky platforms in the UK, with Sky Cinema subscribers getting Paramount Plus at no additional cost. The best news is for all of you in the UK, if you're sitting on the settee and watching Paramount Plus in your anorak, there are no adverts whatsoever. You can just focus on the content and all of those lovely episodes. So finally, UK brethren and sistren, you're about to meet Pike and all of the awesomeness that is Strange New Worlds. More news to come, but first, let's go over to Jim. Uncle Jim, what's going on over there?
Yeah, so there's a little quick story here. Star Trek Picard boss teases major star will play new season 3 villain. Following the recent conclusion of season 2, Terry Metalis has teased that a well-known star will appear in The Bad Guy next time around, replying to a fan on Twitter who asked whether the next villain will be a new character. The show boss replied, quote, "It's a new character played by someone you've seen a million times before. Someone I've always wanted to work with, and wow, you're not ready." Metalis confirmed that it is someone who hasn't been in the Star Trek universe before, saying, "I think it's shaping up to be an extraordinary season of television. It's incredibly different from the two seasons before it and features quite possibly one of the all-time great Star Trek villain performances we've seen to date." End Ooh. Quote. Season 3, which will also be Picard's last, is set to bring back on board more familiar TNG faces, including LeVar Burton as Lieutenant Commander Geordi LaForge, Michael Dorn as Worf, and Gates McFadden as Dr. Beverly Crusher. And this is an interesting twist because I've been reading a lot of stuff, and Gates McFadden says that she's in all 10 of the episodes.
Amen.
And Marina Sirtis said that unlike season one, where she just had a guest spot, which Nepenthe was a phenomenal episode, she said that she is in a lot more than one episode. So, you know, this is shaping up to be, I want to say, maybe like the TNG reunion show, a type of a thing, maybe.
But Jim, let's hope that it isn't just a like trip down memory lane. I want to learn more about these characters. I want to know where they've been. I want to know if Beverly Crusher ever became the chief medical officer at Starfleet like she did in the alternate timeline from All Good Things, you know? Like, there's some stuff that needs to be covered here. In particular, my personal, like, the thing, what happened to Geordi LaForge? Because we've got from the comic canon, the canon adjacent stuff, that LaForge was at the Utopia Planitia shipyards during the attack on Mars that the Synths made. And I would love to see an actual reference or like canonizing of that stuff that we saw in the Picard Countdown comics actually on screen. That is extremely important to me, and I really hope they cover it.
Well, there's a lot that has to happen. You know, what brings Worf back from being the Klingon ambassador of the Federation? He somehow will be back. Data's dead. So, you know, we got Brent Spiner who's returning, but he didn't say as who, so they have to address that as well. You know, obviously it's in the future. Are we going to see? And they also said it's going to be based on a ship. I don't think it'll be the Stargazer. Will it be the Enterprise? I don't know. There's a lot here. We know that Riker's on Nepenthe, retired with Deanna. Well, he was an admiral last time we saw him. But there's a lot of things that have to happen here. And I'm really excited to see how it all pans out. I'm really looking forward to it. So anyways, that wraps up our news. And now, guys, our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We are going to talk about last week's episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, Spock Amok. And before we do that, though, I got to play a little officer's log to get you in the mood, and then Eric's going to dive right in to our fan scores.
Science officer's log, Stardate 2341.4. After our harrowing encounter with Gorn, Enterprise has returned to Starbase 1, one of the oldest, most venerated space stations in the Federation. Newly repaired after the Klingon War, here the crew will be adjourning for some much-needed rest and relaxation. While I have agreed to assist the captain with a diplomatic matter, I plan to spend most of my time here with my fiancé, T'Pring.
All right, Eric, take it away.
All right, well, we always ask what our fan scores are about every episode. So we asked on a score of 1 to 10, like, how did you rate Spock Amok? And Lee Townsend said a 7 for me, but I did love and very much appreciate the classic fighting music from the original series. Yeah, Lee! I totally agree with you, buddy. As soon as I heard that music, I was like, that's the music from the original series! So Lee Townsend, I agree with you, sir. Eric Patton gave a solid 8.5. The body swamp gimmick is a classic. Swap gimmick is a classic. But what I really like is the complexity of Vulcan life shown. Interesting. Thanks, Eric. Lori Miller Willis said a 10. I love it. We got character development, homage to TOS, and a whole lot of laughs. It was perfect. I think the cast is great. Eric Nagamine said 9. Love the shout out to TOS. Turnabout Intruder, Amok Time, even the alien sail ship which absolutely reminded me of DS9. Title still reminds me Amok. Thanks, Eric. Pretty funny connection. Joel Wright gave it a 10. It's one of my favorite of all Star Trek episodes. Thanks, Joel. Dorothy Ann Ferguson said it was the Vulcan Freaky Friday episode. That's exactly what I told my wife. It was great. I'll give it a 10. Thumbs up, thumbs up. Roberta C. Rutherford said it was quite an interesting episode with good laughs. Love this series. It's so creative. 10. Caroline Dahlke gave it a 9.8. Love it. It was tons of fun. But there were a couple of things along that felt a little disjointed or otherwise a bit, quote, off. Overall, though, it was fantastic. Michael Morris gave it a 10 just for using the classic fight music. Yeah. And Kevin Joseph said 9.6. It instantly became one of my faves. So fun because number one and Noonien Singh played off one of their of what their crewmates' assumptions of them were very well. So, Jim, I have to tell you, this one knocked it out of the park as far as I'm concerned. This gives us a combined fan score of 9.4. You'll notice there were no sixes or fours or any of that shenanigans. Seven was our lowest, so a 9.4 from our fans.
Yeah, that's
because
that's,
it was awesome.
Wow.
It was.
It was awesome.
It was absolutely awesome. It was just tremendous.
We're
going to
dive right
level.
In, and we're going to talk about it, but first I got to do this.
Black alert, y'all. We are about to make the jump to some serious spoiler territory.
All right, guys. I like to have about an hour to spend on each review. We're a little bit under that, so I'm going to kind of move along. The first clip I want to play for you guys was mentioned by our fans. I've entitled it Ears.
Spock, your ear. You're a human.
It's a prank.
I will not marry a human. I choose Khaleesi.
Ritual combat. Who am I supposed to fight?
You will fight him.
Fighting myself is illogical.
All right, Eric, take it away. What do you think about that scene?
Oh, man. One of my favorite scenes, total foreshadowing of a Muck Time. And obviously, like, an awesome kind of example of Spock and his inner conflict of, you know, human versus Vulcan. I feel like we get a lot of flavors of this throughout all of Star Trek, but this one in particular was great. One of my favorite things about bringing T'Pring and this whole concept into it is it gives us context for what we see in episodes like A Muck Time from TOS. So really great scene. I loved it.
Yeah, and the Vulcan music. Just wow.
Perfect,
yeah.
Right? I mean, as soon as you hear that music, you're like, oh, wait. What series am I watching? And you can't help it. You're pulled right into it. And you imagine the Khaleesi, you imagine the weapons, which I always forget the names of, which somebody can help me out on. It's just like
a Lirpa.
There we go. The Lirpa. Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys caught it or not, but they paid close attention when Vulcan Spock cuts human Spock, the blood was red.
Yep.
And I thought,
yep,
I thought,
I
wow.
I actually noticed that, Jim. I thought that was great. That was a great little detail that unless you're a Star Trek fan, you might have actually missed that.
Right. That was a really good touch. So that was the first scene that I wanted to mention. The next one that I wanted to, we'll start with this one, was this one. And I'm gonna send this one out to you, Paul. You ready?
Hit me.
It's called Funny Hat.
Doctor! Are you here? Shirley, there's a wasting. We gotta go.
Is it time already?
Are you serious?
Sorry. I've been collecting data to share with Dr. Baroa.
Is that his, you know what? No. Expert in non-invasive surgical techniques? Cutting edge stuff.
intercept her without the cutting.
Oh. You know, she's come all the way from the other side of the quadrant. You don't want to be late to meet her.
Right. 2 minutes.
How about you? Excited to see Lieutenant Dever?
Sure.
So, how are we going to play it this time? You want me to keep my communicator on, or do we need a hand signal?
No need. This is what I appreciate about Dever. He and I are on the same page. Casual, no attachments, it's just for fun, zero commitments page.
It's more like a book than a page, and you said the same thing about that gal on Archimedes 2.
That was a misunderstanding. It was one time.
One very entertaining time.
How is being chased by live phaser fire fun?
Oh, good. I was worried you might show up in a silly hat.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
So, fly fishing.
I hear the biospheres have everything.
You know what? I'm warming to it.
So, Paul, what did you think about that scene? Anything about that scene catch you off guard, maybe?
Oh, there's a lot of good stuff in that scene. It's one of the things that they do really well on Strange New Worlds. Okay, what is that scene? I don't know, 60 seconds long, 90 seconds long. But there's at least four or five things in there going on that are really, really fun, first of all, right? It's engaging. He's wearing the goofy, funny hat, which is endearing because you're picturing him going fly fishing, which is like something that, you know, old school Kirk and Spock would have done in the movies, or Kirk and McCoy or whatever, like when he's climbing El Capitan. It's one of those deals there. But Babs Olazun-McCone is just freaking fantastic. He is just great. He's a little, you know, scatterbrained, but he can also be very intense. I think what's super interesting to me is she came all the way from the other side of the quadrant to see you. What? I mean, okay, there was clearly Chapel thinks that, you know, there's some potential romance going on here for Dr. Mbenga, but we never met her. It was almost like a deleted scene, right? What happened there? It was being set up for him to see this other doctor that, you know, supposedly research, you know, peers or whatever, but something was going on there, and I'm very curious to find out what that was, but it looks like we didn't get an answer. Maybe a deleted scene. I don't know. And, of course, to harken back to what, you know, just briefly, the whole Shatner comment about, you know, intolerance and toxicity of fans. Oh, boy, did everyone freak out on social media over that brief comment that was made, you know, between Nurse Chapel about, you know, oh, my God, that you might have, like, a different thing going on with another gender. Oh, my God, I just can't deal with it. I've got to, like, take all my sweat socks out from under my bed and burn them. I mean, what the hell, folks? I mean, geez Louise. Crazy. But all of that stuff in that short amount of time is just amazing, right? I mean, really, really engaging stuff. I mean, you know, here they are. They're ready. Come on, Doc. We got to go. I mean, it's just clever, fun, engaging stuff. They're great. Again, this cast, fantastic. So for me, it was great. And then, you know, it's just the hat thing kind of becomes a fun running joke. But the fact that he was willing to be silly and do that, and that they're having all that interactivity, I mean, this episode, right? I don't think anyone's expecting it, but it's like a Shakespearean comedy, right? We've gone from a very intense episode last week with the Gorn, right? Yeah. And I would say this, you know, very well might be the episode that within the franchises of Star Trek dethrones Trouble with Tribbles as the most beloved, more comedic episode. I think it's that good, because you could so easily have gone off the rails and been terrible and goofy with, you know, the whole Freaky Friday approach, but they used the whole Katra thing, and which is established stuff, and it worked, right? I think a huge, you know, I'm really running off the rails here.
No, Paul, I just,
but like, it was just great. I think a lot of the reason this episode works so well is the actress who plays T'Pring, who I guess she studied Arlene Martel's performance a lot from what I've seen. And she really tried to make sure that her manner of poise, how she carries herself, the way she speaks, she was hilarious in the driest, most engaging way that any woman who's ever been vexed with her fiance has ever been, that can be related to. And so for me,
you guys, a question.
This cast, awesome.
Are you guys, we know that T'Pring and Spock don't work out. We know this already. But do you find yourself rooting for these guys to work it out? like I do.
Totally.
I mean, I keep, you know, they're trying so hard, and I'm rooting for them, but I know it's doomed because we all know what happens. But they're written so well that I find myself just wanting them to succeed because they're so good together.
I'll just throw out there, Canon Slaves. I don't know that we do know, okay? I don't. And I think that I really don't think that we make a lot of assumptions with this show because of the baggage we bring from past stuff, right? But I'm paying a lot of attention to number one in those conversations with Pike lately, where she's like, you know, what if you make your own destiny? What if things don't have to be that way? What if things can change? There's a million different sci-fi MacGuffin ways you could change the you know, manifest destiny of his quote-unquote fated future, right? I don't necessarily believe that they're going to go down the road of making everything necessarily have to true up to keep canon from exploding. There's a lot of cool ways to do this.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you really want to get together a bunch of talented writers and actors and performers if you're just going to paint through the numbers to satisfy canon? Submit to you, no. I think there's a lot of other creative ways that you can make everybody happy by just being creative with the writing. I really think it's possible. So we'll see.
If you watched The Ready Room for tonight's episode with Alex Kurtzman, who, by the way, is phenomenal and gets it. All those people that anti-Kurtzman, Kurtzman's the devil, he writes anti-Star Trek, whatever garbage they spread, are full of it because Alex Kurtzman gets it. He knows it. He understands it. At least on The Ready Room, he did. And one of the things he says in The Ready Room is that they are not going to reinvent these characters or change anything that's already been pretty much pre-established. They're going to play with the gray areas. They're going to delve into areas that we don't know anything about, but they're not going to really change things that we already know. And we already know that she chooses a fight to the death with Spock and Kirk, and then he walks away from her and leaves her with Stan. So that they're not going to change that.
Right, Jim. But what we don't know is we don't have any real deep emotional details about how that actually affects Spock, because they spend so much time in that episode going through the fight with Kirk and going through all the like stuff with T'Pring and da 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 da. By the time we get to the end of it, we still don't understand how Spock feels about everything. And I feel like what Strange New Worlds gives us the ability to do is it goes back and it says, okay, we now, of course, have, you know, 57, 58 years of established canon that Spock is an emotional guy who tries to hide it, just like every Vulcan out there, although it's particularly intense for him. How does his divorce from T'Pring actually affect him? It's like that's where Strange New Worlds can shine, is it gives us depth to the character. Paul, I would love it if they would actually change and like adjust canon, because I'm the guy who from day one on the Kelvin movies, for example, has said they're eventually going to bring him back around. They're, right? This is an offshoot. They're eventually going to like pull this all back together. Above accepting that a person can have multiple ways of living their life that are valid, I think Spock is the perfect character for that, right? This way, you can show Spock this way, and every one of them has value.
I think it's a lot of possibilities out there. I think that I'm just curious to see it, but you know, I just got to circle back though, because I think Jim's point is the thing that got us all off on this. You absolutely are rooting for these two, right? And you're also rooting for Chapel to be successful in her getting to know Spock more. I mean, you know, it's just like this, there's a lot of alternative realities that we're seeing here that we're bringing to it. And, you know, it's kind of almost like, you know, I don't know that I'm ready to, you know, be married to canon ever, but I think they're going to have fun with it and do it in different ways. But, you know, I mean, there's a, you know, supposedly but be careful of what you assume with this show. I think that would be my best advice for what we think is going to happen or that has to happen. That's just what I think that there's a really smart group of folks in the writer's room here who have thought this through and who have definitely worked on character arc and plot and have a big picture idea of where this stuff could go. But it seems to me what they're absolutely most intent on is satisfying the audience, because so far they have done that 100%.
And I just wanted to add two things before I got something I want to play for Charles. First of all, I think that the portrayal of...
jump in too.
Yep, go ahead.
I was trying to catch in with it, and it's kind of taking this off of Paul. Okay, we're trying to kind of scoot towards the audience. Well, okay, we're serialized. But, okay, last week the Enterprise was severely damaged, and this week it's in perfect condition. It's like, no. Last week it won the battle. It got severely damaged. Then we got to go take it to Starbase 1 and get it repaired. It's like, okay, oh, we're linking into last week's episode. The ship's actually damaged, so let's take it to Starbase and get it repaired. It's like, that's one thing that helps the audience. Like, okay, last week's episode, we don't care what happened last week. No, we care about what happened. So we can go to Starbase 1 and go visit there and get the ship repaired and do a show where we're not going through and visiting the planet of the week. And I think that was a good dose of fun for the fan.
Absolutely. And I was going to say two things. I think that the characters' portrayals of each other, Spock playing to Pring and to Pring playing Spock, is what makes this episode so believable and so enjoyable, because the Freaky Friday with Jamie Lee Curtis and what's her face there?
Was
phenomenal, because they each played each other character so perfect. And that's what they did in this one. You could see each of them playing each other. It was believable. It was fun. And one thing I want to throw in, I read an article, I didn't put it in the news, but we are going to find out what happened with Chapel and Corby. Fans were going crazy about that. She was with a woman thing, and they're all like, what about Corby? We're going to find out about Corby. Kurtzman said that Corby is going to be addressed, and it's going to be in an episode. So the Corby thing, her engagement
awesome.
Corby, is going to come up at, so bear that in mind. So
that could
Charles,
be really cool, man.
One, it's going to be good. Everything has been good so far. This one I picked for you. And the name that I gave this clip is The Nickname.
Lieutenant Ortega, Dr. Mbenga, and Nurse Chapel, you are officially checked out. Enjoy your shore leave.
You don't have to do this in person, you know.
Only way to make sure it's done right. Nice hat, by the way.
Fine. Take it off. What do you two have planned for shore leave?
Are you kidding? They don't shore leave. They shore stay.
All right. The nickname. I don't know what I'm saying. I should probably go. Chief Kyle.
What nickname?
I can't remember. It's...
Where fun goes to die. It's stupid. The yeomen don't know what they're talking about. If they did, they wouldn't be yeomen.
Energize.
Have you heard this, Chief?
No, of course not. No.
All right, Charles, what do you think about that scene?
Well, that one's for you. I think it seriously shows one thing that we have definitely talked about with these two gals, and it's something we've been kind of discussing. How well are they between, how well, who makes the better XO? Who's the better one in charge during battle? And the kind of thing is, yep, we've seen the serious side of these two. It's like, yeah, we're always seeing the serious side. We don't see the fun side. And it's interesting to watch them trying to find ways to have fun. As they suddenly find out Enterprise Bingo, and seems like only a few people have not heard about it. And that includes number one. And as, well, all the kind of like, oh, yeah, I kind of snagged this from the instant. It's like, uh-huh. I think she had her own copy of it. She knew it was there. But I think it gave them a chance, like, why don't we see these two have a little fun? Catch these two entities doing something they're not supposed to be doing. And I love the interrogation between these two. Oh, it's so serious. She's interrogating the first, second, third degree. And it's like, oh, she's sitting back. It's like, okay, you're not grabbing sodas or a beer to have this interview? She's making so much fun and relaxing. She's enjoying herself. And we get to see the two different point of views from these two. And to realize, yeah, they do take their jobs too seriously. And they don't stop to have fun. I know we've got a captain who did that frequently as well on the Enterprise D. Definitely, I think it was a fun scene of, oh, look, and I truthfully like to see them, those two having fun. I think it was fun to see them trying to do some of that bingo. Even though some of that bingo, like, yeah, they don't have to sit there and try to challenge on it. They've done it. But it's like, yeah, it's hard to break the rules when you're the one making the rules.
And what's awesome about this, too, Charles, is the fact that this side plot with Una and La'an, right, thematically, it connects up so beautifully with what's going on with Spock and T'Pring, because it's all about, they do the exchange of the Katras, right, because they want to be able to see what the other person is experiencing, right? And that's the whole thing of these two going through Enterprise Bingo. They want to get a sense of understanding the midshipmen, right, understanding the cadets more. Seeing things through their eyes. That's what the whole episode is about. It's so great. Good point.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
Great writer.
Speaking of that, Eric, you're up next. And I just entitled this clip, You Are Fun.
Why do you let it bother you? Where fun goes to die. It didn't bother me. I just hadn't heard it before. Have you?
No.
And I don't care.
I don't either. Just not knowing makes me feel out of touch. As a senior officer, I don't get to be part of the crew anymore.
Oh, no, that's not because you're a senior officer. It's because you terrify people.
That's a compliment.
Thanks. I mean, what's wrong with liking work? And surely, I mean, the ship clears up, halls are empty, no lines for the massive synthesizers. It's just you and the gentle thrum of the warp core. It's like Christmas. Mm-hmm.
I was looking forward to redoing the duty rosters.
I was planning on checking the phase of house spies in the armory, actually.
Attention, Lieutenant Noonien Singh. Security breach at airlock 4. Unauthorized access in progress.
Copy. Computer, who's on rotation for backup? Belay that. I'm your backup.
People are idiots. You're fun.
All right, Eric, take it away.
Oh, man. This is quite possibly one of the funnest scenes in the entire episode, and it's one of the reasons you will be surprised by my score on this episode, potentially. Oh, my God, you guys, how much fun is this? Yeah, they're just bouncing it back and forth. You are learning the – what I will say, the – for me – the reason it resonates for me is that I'm sort of a middle management guy. So for me, I hear these guys talking about how they want to be fun because it will actually help the people under them become, you know, more effective crew. Like, they want to be fun, not just for themselves, but because for them, it's like geeking out on how can I be the best manager possible. So to me, this scene is just awesome. I love them bantering back and forth about what they can possibly do. I love the fact that there's this list, this like thing that's ship specific, that if you do these things, you know, you'll complete the the list, or I can't remember if they give it a different name other than the list, but that's what I call it. So
bingo.
Bingo. Right. So to me, one of my absolute favorite scenes in the entire episode, and one of the reasons that this is literally one of my favorite episodes of Strange New World so far.
It was good. They reminded me of Scotty when he gets locked.
Oh, yeah.
He gets confined to quarters, and he says, good, I can study my technical journal.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, right? It's like a little,
totally.
It's like a little bit of insight into the crew member's personal world, right? Which I think for us is really fun, because in the 21st century, we crave characters that we can actually dig into and like identify with a little bit. For me, in this series so far, it's Ortega's. I am completely identifying with Ortega's. I love every scene she's in. I love the support she gives. I love the fact that she's not a main character right now, but she literally has contributed to all the important scenes on the show so far. So I love where they're taking the show so far. It's so spicy.
Well, we've got more to talk about, because this next clip I picked for you, Paul. Are you ready?
Hit it.
All right. Here we go. I call this clip Spock and Chapel, as if you don't know what this one's about.
Spock, you're clearly an extraordinarily intelligent person.
Thank you.
But you're also an idiot.
I feel I should have seen that coming. Please, elucidate.
You told her you were going to be home for dinner, and then you weren't.
I found myself in an impossible circumstance where I was unable to reconcile my many duties. It is not a human gesture I'm familiar with.
Designed to break old habits. You're supposed to put her ahead of your duties. But being in a relationship is mutual sacrifice. Pretty much why I avoid them.
I am concerned that Supreme thinks I'm an incompatible mate because I'm half human.
Okay.
I had a terrible dream last night that I had to fight my human side.
Vulcans don't do subtle, do you?
I was raised on Vulcan, among Vulcans. My human family connection was frequently used to isolate me.
Teenage Spock had a pretty lousy time of it, huh?
I was bonded to my pet Selan, Achaya.
I had a Malamute named Milo. Mayor. May not have been this girl, call me stupid. Sharp teeth.
I hope the girl did not repeat the mistake again.
Look, maybe T'Pring just feels misunderstood. The human thing is big in her head. You just have to make her see that you get her, the Vulcan.
Thank you for your advice. If I can ever return the favor, please do not hesitate to ask.
What are friends for?
Friends for.
That was a rhetorical.
Oh, I know. Humans are almost as easy to tease as Vulcans.
Spock tells a joke. Oh my God.
Wow.
All right, take it away.
Yeah, what's not to love about that, right? I mean, it's just like everything, right? And Spock is finally starting to actually show and reciprocate affection for her as a friend, which is pretty cool, right? Because when she tells the dog biting story, right, and they're bonding over pets, he doesn't say, "Oh, I hope the girl wasn't injured," you know. No, he says, "I hope she didn't make that mistake again,"
mm-hmm.
right? Identifying with her and you know, kind of saying, "I got your back, sister." So, I mean, it's a little tiny gesture for him, a big gesture of, you know, acknowledging and affection. It's great, you know, and I am thinking it's just, you watch this and I don't know, because, you know, I don't watch The Ready Room constantly. I mean, just every now and then. But this, to me, looks like a scene that here's two actors that rehearsed this and rehearsed this and rehearsed this and rehearsed this.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a thousand little subtextual gestures in there, and they are clearly just working it. It's just beautifully done. I mean, really nicely done. And she basically plants the seed in his head right then to do the contra swap, right?
Yep.
Because it's just like, you know, it's just like he's saying, you need to show her what that you know, you get her, you know, the whole thing. I mean, she basically puts that idea right there. And I like the idea that, you know, she is really being defined in this episode by it, like being, you know, commitment averse, which is just hilarious. I mean, that's a funny character trait for her to have. Yet you're seeing, you know, that long hold they have on her at the end of that scene, right? Where the camera just holds on her and she's looking up and looking at Spock. And it's just, you know, I can practically smell the plumbing soup. Okay. I mean, it's just like you see it coming, baby.
Yeah.
She's getting hooked, you know. And then at the very end scene later on in the show, you can see that she's just like, ah, God damn it, I'm starting to have feelings for this guy. I mean, you know, it's just great. So really, really, it's terrific. I mean, it's just it is fascinating to watch Peck here and compare him to like the Discovery episodes where he played Spock, because he's admitted, you know, that he didn't really feel he had the greatest handle on the character in those early appearances. But man, he's working it. I mean, every single episode, you know, I think he gets better and better. His delivery gets more interesting and nuanced. I feel like in this one, he got the script and said, okay, good God, this is going to be like, I got 50 years of Spock legacy here. I got to take this seriously, and I'm going to get it right and get it perfect. And he totally did. And it's just, he's very vulnerable, right? I mean, he's being, you know, the repressed half-Vulcan who's holding his emotions at bay. But he does so many things that are endearing, right? Like when T'Pring's in his quarters, right? I'm in the midst of redecorating. Right. He's, you know, making excuses and is being vulnerable about stuff like that, which is great, right? He's you know, he's befuddled because he can't make her happy. He's realizing he's imperfect. He doesn't know what to do about it. That's really likable stuff. And I feel like somebody really did study, somebody in the writing staff here really did study classic Shakespearean comedies, because all those foibles, right? Even things like Mbenga's hat, right? All that stuff is kind of like the goofiness of the supporting characters that you would see in a Shakespearean romantic comedy, right? And it's like, oh, characters falling for character. I'm not supposed to like you because you're my brother's best friend. Oh, dear. You know, all that kind of thing with, you know, Chapel here. I mean, it just feels like it's from that Renaissance drama. Type of
and don't forget, the ultimate tie-in to a TAS episode that we all loved really yesteryear.
Ichaya,
his pet Silat. There you have it. So if you guys haven't watched that, if you have not watched yesteryear from the animated series, now you have a reason to. Gotta go and do it.
And that's a great thing, because they didn't like, you know, drag that out with like unnecessarily fan service exposition, right? It's a matter of fact reference that he makes, and the assumption is that everyone will just get it and they move on. It's just, you know, it's efficient. They don't waste a lot of time with the dialogue. They keep things crisp and have the faith that the audience will be able to follow along, and I just love that. But I want to see more T'Pring. I mean, that's my biggest takeaway from this episode, is I like Spock when she's around a lot, okay? Because he's not perfect. He's trying to be, but he realizes that he's, you know, here's a guy who's, first of all, torn between two worlds, right? He's human and he's Vulcan. He's split down the middle. Oh, but guess what? Now you're torn down the middle in a whole different way, because your loyalties and your commitment between your relationship are being tested against your loyalties and your commitment against your career in Starfleet. That's great stuff, because he's got this duality conflict happening on two different levels now, which is fantastic stuff. And so really for me, just delight. And yet with all that complex, you know, dramatical underpinning, bottom line, this episode was just a hell of a lot of fun, man. And just every single way you could possibly write it. So,
it was
a big, big fat A, man. It's great stuff.
And, Charles,
before you jump into that one, I want to throw one more line in, is I love her comment to Spock later, don't let them be so hard on you. And he's like, well, I try not to. And she's like, no, try it so being so hard on yourself. as she realizes, she lets him know it's okay not to be so critical about yourself. And I thought that was a wonderful line.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, Charles.
It was good.
Because I actually think in another world, T'Pring and Spock might have made a good couple, and they might have actually succeeded in their relationship. But I think that what we're seeing here is the kind of setup for Spock's inability to resolve so many things about himself, and in some ways, like, Spock as the most venerated character of all of Star Trek, it's nice to see him struggling. I like to see these episodes where he doesn't exactly know what to do, and he feels like he's conflicted all the time. And I don't think that the idea is that Spock will eventually figure it all out in the end, right? We know that Spock doesn't figure it all out, and that he still takes to his grave the conflict that he had within himself. And to me, these episodes are feeding right into that. Love it.
It's good. It's good. And Charles, you get the last clip. You get the caboose in this one.
Yep.
Do you know what you're
going
to say, sir?
I certainly hope so.
Come on, Bob. Where's the drama in that?
Well, Captain, tell us, why should we ally with your Federation?
Easy. You shouldn't.
Chris,
why would you turn our enemies into your enemies? We're just a few years clear of the Klingon War. The Romulans are out there biding their time. Who knows what species we'll piss off next? And it's not like we're coming to you with any great respect for your culture. We barely know anything about it. Now, it's pretty clear we're only interested in you for your territory. And what would you get in return? The hypothetical benefit of new trade markets? Scientific advancement? Our promise of support in the event of a crisis, which will probably only come about because you've thrown your lot in with us. Now, the Federation has lots to offer, sure, but it always exacts a price. You have good reason to suspect that price is too high for you to pay.
Thank you.
All right, Charles, go for it.
I heard this speech and just loved what we saw Pike do. You realize in there, one of my notes that I wrote down, with negotiations, it's not always black and white.
Yep.
Is okay. We gotta follow the script. And we noticed during negotiations that they didn't follow the script, and that they were starting with Pike. Then they went to Spock, which was actually Spock to Pell combination. But that to see that, and then Pike goes in, it's like, you know what? I think I understand what these guys are kind of doing. I'm fighting with the Tyrians, but
Tellarite.
I'm fighting with this group.
Right.
I'm trying to be nice with Pike. I'm being logical with the Vulcans. It's like, okay. There was a little bit of discrepancy in there. And to realize that, okay, maybe these guys are just trying to see what people are going to give them. Okay, let's not give them what they want. Let's give them the straight-out truth. Let's be fully honest with them. And Pike goes off on this, and it's like, Admiral's like jaw drop. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, no, I'm going with a hunch. Ah, our captain's going with intuition. And he sits there and goes, sir, says, you know what? I think these guys are kind of playing us a little bit. I think if they got the straight out truth, they show they're getting what they want. And they go through to realize, yeah, that's exactly what they wanted. They wanted somebody with the straight, honest truth to them. oh, you might not want to be in Starfleet. You may not get exactly what you're looking for. But, oh, Starfleet might be there to bail you out when you screw up. Oh, you're doing this? Well, Starfleet may have many voices, but they listen to all those voices. So they sit there and willing to listen to each one. And we go through on that, and Pike's explaining this, and they turn around and say, there's a light ship, which immediately I kind of looked at and had to go look up. I was like, okay.
So awesome.
I know we've seen a similar ship like this before.
DS9.
And to find out it's the Bajoran, it's very similar to the Bajoran light ship from DS9 Explorers. And it's bigger than the ship that we see in DS9. But it was a beautiful ship, and to see them sit there and put that flag out, like, you know what, Pike made perfect sense. That's why we need the Federation to back us up.
I love that, Charles. I love the old technology of the solar sail as a way to propel starships through the stars, and in a current context of somebody who's trying to join the Federation, right? Because when we look at the Bajoran lightship and the way that that thing technologically works during DS9, it's not because somebody's trying to join the Federation. It's not because it's like up-to-the-date technology, right? To me, this one was so special because it showed this kind of old-school technology, but in a race that is currently trying to join the Federation. And when they deploy it and that Federation flag is flying, I'm sorry, but I got some goosebumps, man. That was tight. That was awesome. Oh.
And to see it from Una and Leon's position.
Yes.
They're sitting there trying to finish that bingo card, and all of a sudden that ship just flies right over top
on the hull. Can you imagine, dudes, standing on the hull of a starship in deep space, like looking at that shit? I mean, it's just like unbelievable.
But we start to learn. It's like we get a detail of what the shields are like on those ships, and that just gave us an entirely new view of how those shields exist.
Which is interesting, Charles. I know Jim's going to finish up here quickly, but I just say one thing that is different in Strange New Worlds from Next Generation, for example, on the shields front, is that in Next Generation, the shields are portrayed as a spheroid or a sphere of space that encompasses the ship, whereas in Strange New Worlds, the shields are portrayed as something that holds tight to the hull of the ship, and when like something hits the shields, you actually see it affect the shields in direct proximity to the geometry of the actual ship itself. So one day we will like geek out maybe a little bit on the science of like shield bubbles and that sort of stuff, and see how Strange New Worlds is actually portraying shields really, really differently from the way that shields were portrayed.
Exactly. Well, guys, before we run out of time here, and before we give our scores on the episodes, there's one more thing I want to cover, and that is the Enterprise bingo card. I pulled a screenshot, and I put it on our Facebook page, but I want to read it to you, at least the best that I could make it out. The first square of Enterprise bingo is use a transporter to reflavor gum. We see Una and La'an actually do this one. The second one, Phaser Stun Club. We see them do this one as well. Number three, Turbo Lift 2 Floor Shout Out Challenge. We see them do this one. Okay, number four, set the universal translator to anagram. Number five, Gravity Boot Hang Challenge. Number six, Medical Tricorder Challenge, Vulcan Marsupial.
What?
I don't know what that means.
A Vulcan marsupial. I love it. I can't wait.
Number seven, Food Replicator Challenge, Durian Fruit. Don't know what that is either. Number eight, sneak a triple into the transporter buffer. My favorite. Number nine.
And they said, and the captain back on that one. And they said on that one, it's like, man, there are a lot of tribbles in this buffer.
And number nine, sit in the captain's chair. And number 10, EV suit challenge, unsanctioned spacewalk, sign the scorch. We actually see them do that. And when they're on the hull, which is the scene that Charles was just talking about. So that wraps up our Enterprise challenge.
I've heard one comment of something they didn't do, which would have been fabulous to hear. Who signed the scorch? Yep. I would love to know what crew members have signed it.
In particular, because we have so much history of the Enterprise. Like, if you guys, like, we're not going to belabor it right now, but if you guys go back and look at the actual history of the Enterprise, you know that before Kirk, there was at least 11 years of Enterprise, right? So that is even pre-Pike. We got some April in there that we don't know too much about. So that would be so much fun to see.
So, guys, let's go around and score the episode, and then we'll wrap things up. And let's start off with you, Paul. Score of 1 to 10, Spock-a-mock.
10. It's everything you would hope that this show would be. Absolutely. Kudos to William Shakespeare for the inspiration, but I just adored it. It was, for me, takeaway word here is delightful. This was a delightful episode in every single way.
10 tribbles from Paul. Eric, how many tribbles are you going to throw at this episode?
I am a math geek, so I'm going to say 9.9 repetend 9, because this is as close to 10 as you can possibly get, just like absolutely perfect in its execution of references to TOS. New stories that are popping up, new character things that we're learning. Chapel is one of my new favorite characters. So to me, guys, Star Trek doesn't get much better than this. I gave Star Trek Discovery Season 4, the very last episode, a 10. I'm going to give this one 9.9. I can't stop saying nines.
All right. So that's pretty tough to follow, Charles. How many tribbles are you going to throw at this one?
Not quite as high as my other co-hosts. I've been doing a lot. My highest so far is a 9.4. I'm going to bump it up this week to a 9.6. A little bit 9. Of room 6. For improvement, but they really did a good job with it.
And, you know, I'm going to go right around Eric. I'm going to go with a 9.9. And the only reason I didn't give it a 10 is because we didn't get any Hammer Time in this episode,
right?
We didn't get any Hammer's words of wisdom or any of that great stuff in this particular episode. So I just knocked a little bit off, but still, 9.9 is pretty damn good, if I do say so myself. I want to let you guys know that on Monday we have a great show planned. You definitely want to hang out with us on Monday night. Same bat time, same bat channel, 7:30. Lori Ulster is going to be with us. Lori Ulster was a supervising producer on After Trek, which was the Star Trek Discovery Season 1 version of The Ready Room. She was also a producer on Star Trek Discovery Season 1, senior editor at Trek Movie, and a co-host over at All Access Star Trek Podcast. She's going to be with us on Monday night, so you definitely don't want to miss that one. I want to say thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure, man. That was a great conversation and a terrific episode.
It was awesome, and tonight's episode is just as good. I've already watched it. Also, we want to say thank you so much to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Eric.
Oh, one of my favorite conversations this season so far, guys. That was a really good time.
And thank you to Charles for hanging out and Trek talking. Thank you so much, Charles.
Oh, had so much fun with this episode.
It was great. And it was great. And of course,
we had a lot of fun with birthdays too.
Yeah, birthdays are always good. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I want to say thank you to each and every single one of you guys that put us at number 22 on the 60 Best Star Trek Podcast. So I thank you so, so much, guys. I really appreciate it. So with that, we're going to wrap up the show. I want to say Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better believe that. Please stay safe and be good to each other. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Nail.
Cheers. Be well.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.